Relax the Back, solutions for back pain. Feel better, work better, live better. Don't let back pain keep you from the golf course. Let our specially trained associates guide you to the perfect solution for your discomfort. Relax the Back, now selling the mattresses of the future, the most comfortable bed you will ever sleep on. State-of-the-art mattresses and pillows for better sleep and a healthy lifestyle. We offer a complete line of comfort solution products that will improve posture, circulation, and overall health, including a wide array of ergonomic office solutions, back support, height-adjustable desks, fitness and therapy products, and the best selections of zero-gravity recliners available anywhere. Relax the Back solutions for back pain, the country's leading specialty retailer of neck and back pain relief and back comfort products, as well as world-class massage chairs, located at 6343 Penn Avenue. Call 412-362-2225. That's 412-362-2225. Online at relaxtheback.com.
Good morning! Crib Live Radio presents the Morning Sports Report.
And this is my wake-up show. I'll be coming at you every morning. About this time, hoping to make your experience the best available in this price range.
An update and preview of everything going on in Pittsburgh sports. Now the Morning Sports Report. Crib Total Media. See what's next.
I've been telling you guys, give Landry Jones a chance. Nobody listens to me on this show ever.
Well, that part you got right.
Who saw this coming? Who saw this coming? The Landry Jones performance, or is the bigger story, Tim, the defense yesterday? And are we focusing on the wrong?
Well, I saw it coming as by my pick and pork and as by telling Mike Grau yesterday that I thought the Steelers were going to win, but not in this fashion. I thought they were going to win because I thought Arizona was overrated, had played a bunch of chumps, and had an inflated record, house of cards, I'll call it. And I thought that Vic was starting to get a handle on the offense and would continue more like he did in the fourth. Never dreaming all this stuff would take place.
House of Cards is a good headline, almost as good as Sky High. From Martavis Bryant's
Trib Sports section today.
Yeah. I used House of Cards on Channel 4.
Whoever does our headlines, they don't follow sports all that much, do they? Or was this intentional and now they're going to hear about it? Because if it's intentional, I think it's funny. If it's unintentional,
I think
it might be funnier.
It's intentional. Oh. I think they have tried to be a little New York Post-ish at times with this. I like it.
If it's intentional, then I like it. I know the Steelers wouldn't, but I like it.
I'm not sure the Steelers wouldn't. Let's remember that Mike Tomlin called Rashard Mendenhall the Islamist Jihad runner at practice after he had his Osama bin Laden tweets. So,
let's right.
Not like the Steelers are.
After seeing him weave his way for 88 yards through that Arizona Cardinal defense,
wow,
on the
what
touchdown
a run
from Landry Jones.
What a throw from Jones.
Looked like Secretariat running away from the
affirmed
horses in the field. Yeah, I mean, just.
Was that Aladar? Aladar and affirmed. Yeah, never mind. You get the imagery.
Yes.
The thing about that play that made me scratch my head as I'm watching it unfold, I was like, boy, this guy looks awful fast for somebody who tweaked a knee last week.
He said he was back to 100%. He was asked about that in the post-game locker room. Martavis.
Was
said,
he ever not 100% is what I'm getting at. And was there maybe a little bit more to that theory that he was
being punished,
facing additional team discipline from
within?
And if
that's true, then the sky-high headline, even if on purpose, shouldn't bother them, but
right,
almost fit their.
Well, that's where I was going with what Ken just said. Maybe the Steelers aren't upset about it.
He did pause. He was asked about his injury. He paused. There was sort of a long.
Injury? I'm not hurt. Oh, yeah.
I'm 100%. Yeah. I'm back. It was just tweak my knee in practice.
Well, you know what marijuana does to short-term memory.
It's like when your wife says, how were things at the library? And you're like, oh, go good.
2-1 without
Six
Ben
IPAs.
Roethlisberger. Is this like bring back memories of the Charlie Batch win on the road? We talked about
you know what it brought? I was saying this to Batch yesterday.
Okay, go ahead. I want to see if it reminds you of the same thing.
It reminded me of the game where Tommy Maddox came in for
against
Cordell.
Texas? Oh, no.
No. Against, he was bad against the Texans.
Yeah, but that's what this reminds me of. The statistical oddity of winning this game. They lost that game, even though the Texans didn't get across the 50-yard line until, like, the fourth quarter or whatever ridiculous.
You're right. The first half of this game felt like that.
Yeah, it was just unbelievable. They still had 245 more passing yards than the Steelers.
Well, the stats.
Carson Palmer will always be Carson Palmer. It used to irk me when he was always ranked up there with the Bengals as one, with Peyton Manning, with
Tom Brady with whoever they considered elite quarterbacks were at the time, because I never thought he was in that top five or even top 10 group.
Yeah.
Well, the numbers that you're speaking to, Guy, they were 0 for 7 on their first 7 third downs. Vic was 3 of 8 for 6 passing yards.
Is that bad?
The Steelers were at 114 total yards before Landry Jones came in midway through the third.
Wow.
I know at the 12-minute mark of the second quarter, I wrote this down. Average yards per play, Arizona 9.5, Pittsburgh 0.5, and the Steelers had 9 first-quarter yards. So there's some of the stats that you're talking about that are representative
they
of your
memories. They should have been losing 21-3 at halftime,
that
at least.
Houston game. I know where you're going with that. The game that it reminded me of was the Cleveland game where Maddox came in after Cordell had lost the first two games with the Steelers in 2002, when Tommy Maddox's first burst on the scene moment. He led them to that big comeback against the Browns, salvaged the season. He was the starter the rest of the way. And that's what this felt like to me, because Cordell was just doing nothing. He was getting booed. In this game, I don't remember the fans were booing Michael Vick all that much, booing him to the bench, but when Landry got in there, there wasn't...
They booed him. The biggest, I remember them booing, he completed I think it was to Bryant, short pass to this side of the, it was like third and three, and he completed a 1 yard pass to Bryant on the sideline, and they went off the field again, and there were some boos. That was the one time.
I think he scrambled.
That might have been booing the offense or the play call more than it was actually booing Vic, but they were booing.
Tomlin said at no point he considered taking Vic out. Is he an idiot? Or I mean, were you guys calling for Landry? Because I was last week.
Well, from what you've seen of that guy in the past, what I'll give them credit for, and he addressed this himself afterwards, they didn't put him in and say, hand the ball off 10 times in a row. They let him throw, and they were rewarded for it.
I know. Last week I had tweeted during the game, put Landry in. But then Vic had a great fourth quarter. So I'm sitting there this time thinking, Tim, at halftime, yes, they're lucky to be in it. I can't call for Landry because Vic, last week, came in and won a game for him in the fourth. So maybe they're thinking the same thing.
Well,
but
if he wouldn't have gotten hurt, they would have lost that game because he'd have been too pig-headed to take him out.
Don't you think? I mean, there's no way they were taking Vic out of the game.
I don't get the impression that they were planning to take Vic out. From what I was told from somebody who was at practice on Friday, of all the bad practices and bad games that Landry Jones has had, Friday was his worst practice ever.
Oh. That's saying something.
Ever. That's what I was told. By somebody who's been to a lot of practices, and it was reiterated again today. I heard it on DVE. Dale Lawley was on the show as I was coming in. Let's listen to the guys there. And he didn't say exactly that, but he made it sound like he was bad again on Friday. So here you go. You got a coaching
staff.
There's
no way Vic starts next week if Roethlisberger can't play, right? Is it the done deal that Landry Jones starts?
Tomlin didn't say that. Maybe he's just...
Is it up for grab who has the better week of practice? I mean, what do you think?
That's what I laughed at, because the phrase that was used by Tomlin was, we've got options at quarterback. No, you don't.
No, you've got an option quarterback.
You do not have...
Both have won a game.
You do not have options at quarterback. Michael Vick is not an option after what you saw on Sunday.
He won a game for them 2 weeks ago.
You're kidding me. You would go with Michael Vick?
I don't know.
Why? How could you go... He had one pass and one drive against San Diego.
You have seen Landry Jones as I have. Even in this game, he hit Antonio Brown in the knee and threw it 5 yards behind him where it was almost intercepted.
But he let him on four straight scoring drives, Ken. That's more than Vic has shown at any time.
Well, I don't know. Vic in the fourth quarter let him on a two-minute game-winning touchdown
like
drive
Tim
on
said,
the road.
One long pass and one drive. That was impressive.
With his
it
legs.
Was.
Here's what I would say. This is the old Mike Barker, our program director, philosophy. When you have backup quarterbacks...
To start with a half-point lead.
He loves... Just the change-up. Okay, Ben's not healthy. Now we got guys that are different. You bring somebody in that's totally different from the first guy, and the defense is never ready for it.
Doesn't know what to do.
Haven't you seen this a million times?
Do you think they prepared at all for seeing Landry Jones in this game?
That's what I mean. Somewhere deep down, I'm thinking, if you give Landry a full week of practice and the other team a full week to prepare, he's going to be terrible.
Yeah.
This is akin to people saying that the Pirates should have started Gerrit Cole and then in the third inning brought in Francisco Liriano. So you have the lefty going against the lefty lineup. You change it up midway through. Is that what you're saying? So start Landry, but then for no particular reason in the second quarter put Vic back in there?
Well, not for no particular reason. If he's struggling, if either of them are struggling, you bring the other one in.
Okay,
now. But
who do you start?
I don't know that it matters.
Oh, come on.
Daniel Murphy.
Of course it matters.
I don't know that it matters.
Yes, it matters.
You start Landry. Okay, if it's me, I'm starting Landry based on the momentum from that game. But if he stinks through a quarter, I'm putting Vic back in.
It's not just who threw well and who didn't. It's the kind of offense you can run. mean, as soon as Landry got in there, they started spreading the field again.
Yeah.
He was going five wide.
I know.
For the love of God, he audibled once. He made a read at the line
of
scrimmage.
That was stunning.
And was allowed to check out of something. He might have just checked into a run.
Tim, I think just by pure the time that he's been here, you have the entire playbook to use too, which I'm sure they don't with Vic.
Apparently they do not. And they're afraid to give him more.
Agreed. It was embarrassing. The first half, he should have been pulled probably in hindsight. They're lucky that Vic pulled a hamstring. But I think now you've got two guys that are so different. It's the left-handed pitching sidewinder and then the big right-hander who comes in and you're just not ready for him. You're in Kansas City. We'll see. Maybe Ben was walking around, you know, fairly well. So I'm not saying he can't play this week for sure either.
The one thing that would lead me to say start Vic is because of who you're playing. You're going up against a team that can still get after the quarterback, and Vic can escape that. And
if he's healthy.
If he's healthy. But if he's got a barking hamstring.
Right.
All right, bad phrase. If he's got a pulled hamstring.
You write headlines for the Trib?
I know, exactly. That's right up there, sky high. If he's got a tender hamstring, then what I think they should do is definitely go with Landry, because if Vic can't be mobile, then he's absolutely useless. You know, if he made the big throw.
Plus, Landry eats up the Midwest, being an Oklahoma guy.
Yeah, that's right.
He's going to be closer to home.
He'll be in his home digs.
That team's 1-5, but Arrowhead's a tough place to play.
Yes. What a win, though, to be looking at possibly 5-2. I mean, the Chiefs have lost 5 games in a row.
They don't have Charles.
Right.
Macklin got knocked out with a concussion yesterday.
They lost DeVito, a lineman, with a concussion yesterday.
I mean, the Bengals keep winning, 6-0, but the Ravens lose again. The Browns lose again. You're comfortably in a wild card position with you and the Jets, and Ben, his absence has really not been that big of a factor. I mean, the Baltimore game looked bad. These are two giant wins for the franchise.
To tell you the truth, though, if you want to talk about Vic, the Baltimore game, he played pretty well. I mean, he had them a lead early in the second half that should have won them the game. It's not his fault that they kind of sat on it, that when he got them in field goal position, they couldn't produce the field goals. In fact, even though he led them to the win at San Diego late, overall, his best game might have been against Baltimore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the morning show here on Triple Live Radio. We're brought
and
to you by
Duffy's Beer. And thinking where they'd be if they could have won that game. I mean, the Bengals have a bye next week. That would mean you'd probably be playing for first place when they come here in 2 weeks if they'd have held on to that, although you could say that, you know, they probably should have won that. They probably should have lost the Chargers game. Or they probably should have lost. Yeah, I mean, stuff evens out a little bit. You can't.
Yeah, like yesterday, can you say they should have lost? I think the biggest part where you go back to and say they're lucky.
Halftime.
The end of the first half, there were two plays. The pass interference in the end zone, the offensive pass interference, Arizona got called for. And then Cockrell got away with a little tug on the jersey.
A little tug. He undressed him.
That's big, though. Now instead of.
I kept waiting for him to put a dollar down his pants.
Meanwhile, they had a penalty that called back an interception. I mean, it was kind of a free play anyway. They had a penalty that called back a touchdown and a penalty that took them out of field goal range. So, I mean, you're not the two or three times they thought there was a pass interference the Steelers weren't called for. If I'm looking at it from an Arizona coaching's point of view, I'm pissed off.
But I don't want to take anything away from Pittsburgh's part of the win either. Like, no, I feel like they deserve credit for this.
This is how I started my highlights last night. I said the first series of the game was prophetic at what would be the day for the Cardinals. He completes a 45-yard bomb to John Brown to the 32-yard line, first down, and they don't even get a field goal try out of it because they fumble, which they recovered, but lost a bunch of yards, and then took a penalty, and they had a punt from midfield. Yeah. That was their day. One step forward, two steps back.
I was feeling pretty good about myself the way that game started, because I said on the air, pretty much any outlet I was on, they're going to come off the bus throwing. What'd they do? Throw a bomb to John Brown. I said,
first pass.
You watch early in the game, there'll be a pick, maybe a pick six, because Michael Vick is trying too hard to force the ball to a covered Antonio Brown. What happened?
I thought that too.
The Honey Badgers dropped a pick six, but I still felt good about that prediction. The next thing you know, they lost. I'm kicking my own ass and picking pork again after I got off to a great start with Pitt.
I could have been 5-0. The one game I listened to, Tim, I got wrong.
Which one was that, Arizona?
No, the Patriots were going to kick asses. They wanted this game so
bad. Oh, what a backdoor cover that was.
I know. I could have been five. I could have been a contender.
Leave it to the Patriots to ruin everybody's fun. Because, you know, we were watching that game, and the whole world was having a good laugh at Chuck Pagano and the Indianapolis Colts for that stupid trick punt that's like the talk of America today. And it was just like a fun watch. And then all of a sudden, you look up, it's like, oh, my God, they're only up 9? How are they? Was it 10? 10, they were up 10. How is that possible? And then they let that backdoor cover, the same backdoor Pagano slinked out of on the way home. God, that was a pisser. That's why you don't gamble, kids.
Duffy's Beer and Much More in Pleasant Hills brings you the Trib Live Radio Morning Show at 412-653-BEER. All their weekly specials at duffysbeer.com.
Did you guys see the fake punt, by the way?
I did. I watched that.
I did not.
Did you watch it?
I was anchoring, and I was
hilarious.
I had the game
hilarious.
On, couldn't watch every play.
So I was looking down at my phone because they were ready to punt, and Collinsworth says, what are they doing, or something. And I looked up as stunned as everybody.
What they did, Guy, was they took 9 people and just moved them all over to the right sideline, and they left a punter and the up back. Sorry, I take that back. A wide receiver and the up back. They left the football sitting there all by themselves. Okay, so 9 guys move over to the right side. 2 guys from the left, the up back and the wide receiver, go to the ball. The wide receiver stands over the ball, and there's 2 guys from the Patriots then just standing in front of them. Like, okay, what are you going to do here? Like Brandon Bolden, and I don't know who the other guy was. But they're waiting, and for some reason, I think Pagano was trying to get them to jump, or Pagano was trying to sucker them off sides or something. Get them to do something dumb, and then they could take advantage of it. But for some bizarre reason then, the kid snapped the ball. If it didn't sucker them, draw them off sides, what have you, miss a line, then I guess they're just supposed to eat it and
take the five
call a timeout and then punt. The kid snapped it. And Brandon Bolden's just looking at him like, okay, I'll tackle you. And then tackles him down to the ground. And they had to give possession back over to the Patriots. It was hilarious.
Wow.
Pagano called it a communication breakdown.
Well, you know how they raised that banner in Indy? You know, the one that said AFC Championship Game Finalist?
Yeah, yeah.
All these memes were going around the internet yesterday. Indianapolis Colts, worst punt ever attempted on a banner being hoisted up to Lucas Oil Stadium. I said the one that should be Indianapolis Colts Sunday Night Football Finalist and just hoist that.
What's the bigger talking point of water coolers today, that play or the Michigan-Michigan State ending?
Well, the Michigan-Michigan State.
Depends where you live.
Yeah, well, there's that. It depends where you live, A, and B, there's another day removed from the Michigan-Michigan State thing. But I think a lot of people watched
that. That ended the game. That was it. Have you ever seen an ending to a sporting event any crazier?
Never.
Oh, that kid was getting
death threats.
You know,
the Cal band play, maybe, but...
Yeah, in a way, because... Who was Cal playing that day? Because
Stanford.
So that was a big sort of rivalry game. I mean, because this is such a big rivalry game.
Oh, my God.
And to be in Ann Arbor...
Just to take the smirk off Harbaugh's face for a day was worth it.
It was a bad weekend for the Harbaughs. Yeah. It's a good weekend for us. Give us a sportstalk@tribweb.com email. We want your 3 takes from all the weekend in sports, Pittsburgh, nationally, Steelers, of course. We're talking Steelers all morning here. We got locker room sound to get to.
Do you know the story on that kid, that Michigan punter?
No.
The guy who blew the whole game with that crazy
Blake
something or other.
I don't know his name.
He's Australian, right?
Oh, I did hear that.
He's like he was a star rugby player, Australian rules rugby player, whatever. He already has a degree. He's working on his 3rd degree right now. I don't know if he's 20. He must be like 20-something, 25, 26, something like that. He's a grad student going to get this 3rd degree at Michigan. I guess he hasn't even been good. Hasn't he been an all-right
kicker? He's getting the 3rd degree, all right.
But he's getting death threats. People are harassing him and his family. The entire fan base has turned against him. It was like Josh Scobie times 10.
Blake O'Neal is his name.
Yeah, and ESPN did this big thing on him. Like trying to calm the waters and calm the world down from attacking this kid online. Anybody who bet on him, I'm sure, just completely annihilated him. But he was like vilified on Twitter.
If he would have just tried to fall on it, he like spun around and threw the football after he bobbled.
Right,
it.
Exactly. And then what? The Michigan State kid. What happened to him? Break his arm or tear his labrum or something in the celebration?
Oh, the kid was at the bottom of the pile?
Yeah, they took him off in a stretcher.
Oh, I didn't even see that. I saw him saying, everybody get off me. He was screaming there at the bottom of the pile. I thought maybe he couldn't breathe.
But... Yeah, he was pumping his one healthy arm up in the air while he's being taken out of the stretcher.
That was worth it.
But that, yeah, that was wild. So you're right. Those two games, those are two water cooler talking.
You wonder if his rugby instincts would cause them to try to garrow you premium there. I mean, it was just, you know, if you were an American football player, would your instincts have just told you fall on it, kick it out of bounds, do anything?
7-0 Michigan State as they,
I want that one. Didn't I take Michigan State? I tried to talk everybody into giving us an extra college football game.
We didn't pick that one.
God.
Good try. I want to give the Steelers decent props here before we get to some mail here to start the morning. And, of course, brought to you by Invisible Fence Brand here as well.
It was a hip injury, his name. Jalen Watts Jackson. It was a hip injury that he suffered.
Oh, the hip, okay. Invisible Fence Brand, Morning Sports Report.
There's a labrum there. You can labrum in your shoulder
that's
and your
hip. That's probably
what
I heard,
That probably was a labrum.
But he's out for the year.
Oh, brother.
Always, you can schedule a free in-home consultation at InvisibleFence.com. Three takeaways from the Steelers defense, guys. And
James Harrison is 21 years old. He lied about his age.
Wow.
What a game.
He was going to retire last year.
I know.
He declared this was it.
He played really well, and you have no Will Allen. You have no Jarvis Jones.
Another blessing in disguise.
Well, maybe.
No Jarvis Jones.
But as Mike.
But he played pretty well last week, I thought, against
San
Diego.
Mike Barker pointed out, our program director, that no one has really talked about. I think they have too much respect for Dick LeBeau, how much better this defense looks, even with injuries, now that he's gone.
Well, I love the tweet that Ken put out yesterday. I retweeted as soon as I saw it. I was talking about it on the postgame show, too. Gave you a little love on the Steeler Radio Network, Ken.
You did?
Yes, with Charlie on the postgame show.
Regarding what?
The tweet that you sent out about Carson Palmer and his comments afterwards.
I thought that was big, yeah.
Carson Palmer said afterwards, they put some stuff out there on the field today that we hadn't seen all year. It wasn't on tape. Did you ever hear that about a Dick LeBeau defense? Ever! So here's a revamped defense to begin with, A, and now they're tweaking it in games and week to week, too?
Yeah.
When did that ever happen? The one Patriot game where Cortez Allen guarded Gronkowski. Give me another example. You know, you're talking about different tweaks and things that they've never done before that other teams are surprised to see. Remember, LeBeau's whole mantra for how many years here was, we know what we do, you know what we do, we're going to go out there and we're going to do it anyway.
Right.
And that got, I thought, remarkably stale for the last 3 to 4 years.
They were pretty good at it. I mean, I hate to rip Dick LeBeau.
No, I'm not. You can't rip his whole career. You could rip the last couple of years, though, especially in light of the way things are going now.
I mean, last year they were a division champion under Dick LeBeau. So
not because of the defense, though.
Well.
In large part, the defense held them back from maybe getting a bye.
Okay, but I don't disagree with anything you're saying, that the change of pace, again, back to the quarterback thing, just having something different once in a while can just be good for the sake of change, and you're seeing it here. Not that Carson Palmer is unbeatable, and maybe we built them up too much. Their record is sort of a house of cards, to use your term, Guy. I mean, Arizona had beaten a bunch of bad teams.
Did you see that yourself? Were you there with Carson Palmer? Or
no, that came out in a quote sheet.
Quote sheet, okay.
That I passed along. Because I was in the Steelers.
I thought that was telling. I thought that was very interesting.
Well, and two other things. I mean, you mentioned Harrison's health guy. He said to me, I asked him the question about how he feels, and he said, I feel as healthy as I have since 2010. I feel like 5 years ago.
Wow.
And on the other side, Mike Mitchell was asked about his health, and he said, he kind of smirked, and he said, it's just nice to be healthy. And he had all those injuries nobody knew about until after the year. That's a great game-saving play that Mike Mitchell makes at the end of the game. They probably lose that game and give up a touchdown, right? First and 10 at the 20 with under 5 minutes to go, and Mitchell comes up with a takeaway. That is big time. You got a defense that's looking legitimate here all of a sudden.
What was it there, 18 to 10? 18 to 13? What was the score at that point?
Go back to the laminated.
I'll tell you one thing I thought was – the one thing that I had
me – 18-13.
So I would have put them ahead. When they went for two right after Landry Jones threw the touchdown, that with a 2-point lead, I thought that was asinine. I don't care if Johnny Unitas is your quarterback there and you've made 22-point conversions in a row. That stage of the game, as much as you've struggled, you gotta protect your field goal lead. You can't go for two there.
It's so classic that coaches outthinking themselves with the new 2-point rules. That is as much an example of what I was preaching.
That's why you need a chart, Tim. That's why you got to have a chart there to tell you what to do.
And I knew your Laird Plant tweet was coming. I couldn't get it off to you before you sent it to me. Nice job on the Laird Plant. That is not the Laird Plant.
Why? Because of Landry?
Yes.
Or because of what the score was?
Because
in either case, the answer is yes. Either case, you should be answering yes, because there's no reason to defend that. But my point about them out thinking themselves is last year before the rules change, does Mike Tomlin ever consider going for two there?
With Ben or with
anybody?
The backup.
Because you an extra point gives you a 3-point lead. Oh. That thought never enters his mind last year.
When did that happen? That was the first, that was third quarter, right? So it's pretty early. You got about, 7 or 8 minutes left in the third quarter. So it's early enough that you're not into fourth quarter mode where you're so worried about 3 points or 4 points. So if Ben was in there, I wouldn't have had a big problem with it.
I would have still.
If they're a better than 50% proposition of making it, but with Landry, I'm not doing it. But if you take the lead, now some people were spinning it the other way, like Tomlin is so aggressive, you got to praise him. He's going for the win. You know, he's trying to go up 4 points. I don't think that.
And it wasn't because they missed it. I was screaming just when they came out with him under center, or wasn't under center, but I mean when they came out with Jones in there instead of the kicker.
Yeah, let's forget the.
How
Landry
about him?
Jones.
What do you have? A 51 and a 47 yarder.
Boswell.
Right. Yeah, we haven't talked about Boswell yet.
I mean, five for five now. I mean,
storylines from this game.
Well, as we all know, Pittsburgh is renowned for its great place kickers, Boswell and Blewett.
Yes, true. Yeah. Blewett would have been a better weekend.
The Blewett thing. Oh, I guess, well, should I wait before we start talking about Pitt? Because I'll get to Blewett in a second if you want me to hold on.
Yeah, let's wait.
Okay, I'll wait on that. Then. But Boswell's, the impact of the kicker also, I think, plays into the thinking and why it was flawed in the 2-point. Because Boswell had already made two at that point? Or he only made one at that point?
Before the 50-yarder?
No, before the 2-point conversion.
Oh, before the 2-point conversion.
I think he made two, correct?
The 51-yarder came later. He'd made a 48.
Yeah, because it was 13. It was 10-6 they were losing.
Okay, yes.
He made a 47 and a 48-yarder.
So that put him ahead 12-10.
Two pretty sizable field goals at Heinz Field under his belt.
Yes.
And you're starting to feel okay about this kid after last week, right?
Yep.
Okay. Their guy had missed a 47-yarder. So you've got the opportunity to kick a field goal from 10 yards closer than his longest field goal to kick the extra point to make it 13.
Uh-huh.
You got that chance, and their guy has already missed one. Just go up by a field goal. Go up by three instead of going.
Right.
Again, the thinking, it was always there for –
Yeah,
years.
This isn't that I don't have confidence in because it's Landry Jones you don't go for two. This is game
score
dictated.
Situation.
Score dictated. It's what I said at the beginning of the year when the Laird plan was first unearthed at NATO.
Mondays on Trib Live Radio brought to you by Relax the Back Solutions for Pain. Feel better, work better, live better online at relaxtheback.com. They are now selling the mattress of the future, the Landry Jones model, the most comfortable bed you'll ever sleep on. Relaxtheback.com. Justin M. checks in. Ken, I thought you were for the 2-point conversion. Last night on TV, you were against it. Stop bringing up the moral victory of Pitt. Does the Baltimore loss look terrible, or could the Steelers be 5-1? I guess is the question about the Baltimore loss now.
Well, I'll take the San Diego and Arizona wins as improbable as both were for the Baltimore loss. I'll take a 2-for-1 there. You know, you could be greedy and say what if in that game, but to win.
Scobie was a big part of that.
They probably should have lost two of those three games, and they won two of the three of them. Be happy with that and move on.
I remember asking you guys after the Baltimore game, will this be remembered as the Josh Scobie Blewett game? And here we are a couple weeks later. It probably is, right? If they had a better kicker, they win that game.
No, the Blewett game will be sad, Georgia Tech. The Scobie games. One note on LeBeau before you go on there, more emails, Ken. Tennessee is second in the league in yards allowed. Second fewest. Just
wow.
Even though they're 1-4.
They got blown out yesterday, but probably their offense was the problem.
Wiz making some headlines, huh?
Yeah, what he called out the
Dolphins.
Dolphins?
Said that they were trying to take out Mariota. Did you see the one play?
It came in low.
Yeah. It looked like it was a leg dive, but...
It looked like the play Ben got hurt on,
I thought. Chicken shit football.
Didn't you think? It looked like the kind of play that Ben got hurt on, kind of on his stomach going toward the quarterback? Maybe a little,
I thought
a little more aggressive than
Ben. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I actually thought the Dolphin guy was more in control of his body than what Barron had the chance to be. And there was less... You knew Mariota was on the blind side. Mariota was standing there throwing as opposed to Ben moving around and moving into the pocket, up into the pocket, into Barron's tackle.
Justin says, I still don't trust the Steelers' defense when they have a small lead. I know they've gotten better. Just my gut feeling.
Yeah, but in a league where teams score 30 points regularly, they're allowing like 17 a game. I mean, it's you can go to each game, and they still have kept the Patriots to their lowest point total of the year. You know, 5 sacks against San Francisco, no touchdowns against St. Louis, 5 sacks and 2 takeaways against Baltimore.
That's the thing to me is the
three takeaways yesterday. Palmer only had 4 picks all year.
Like, I was looking at the secondary, and I'm thinking, okay, Robert Golden's playing pretty well.
Yeah.
Cockrell got away with a few things, but he's pretty solid. Gay's good. You know, Mitchell's playing great. It's actually a good team everywhere.
Blake?
Yeah, Blake. Blake's a tough tackler. He makes some – they were picking on him a little bit. I think they were attacking him. I think they're legit. I mean, I don't know what – in today's NFL, you're not going to get much better than this, right?
As far as defense goes?
Well, it shows you what – I mean, you know, we talked a lot about and it's happening in Tennessee. They're not giving up yards, but they're giving up points. We talked about that with the Steelers, and they weren't getting turnovers in recent years. It shows you how forgiving turnovers make everything else about your game.
Yeah.
Whether you're not producing on offense as they weren't at all in the first half yesterday, or you're allowing a team to go up and down the field and throw for 245 more yards than you, you still win the game if you take it away three times.
Steelers number 5 in points allowed defense right now.
Yeah, they were...
The Jets are first, right?
Jets won. Yeah. They entered the week tied for 7th, and then they, I think the average was 17-something, obviously held them to 13 yesterday, so their average went down and they went up in the rankings.
18 points per game, flat.
Who are the teams in front of
Steelers?
Them?
Steelers. 18 points allowed per game. Jets 1, Vikings 2. Vikings 2. Surprising. Packers 3. Denver 4. Pittsburgh 5.
Boy, it's also surprising the Packers are up that high.
The Vikings just...
Carolina 6.
Their games are all 13-10. They're the boringest team in the league.
Chase asks, has any Steelers kicker made 3 47-plus field goals in any one game, particularly in Heinz Field?
That's a good question.
I don't know that with Chase. I'm going to have to... I would ask Cabali.
He was pretty boring.
I don't
after,
know about
huh?
that. I would think
not
that
a lot of personality
Reed...
using from Chris Boswell.
Think that Jeff Reed or Sweezen probably has done that.
Well, how about Tomlin? He was asked about his kicker. He saved his ass yesterday, and he says he was solid. He gives 3 words of an answer. What a jagoff!
He's got one of those Neanderthal attitudes about kickers. Just like he said at the beginning of the year, I'm not a kicker. It's not my problem. And
can't you give the guy a little props? He was huge yesterday.
Yeah.
He's gushing about Landry because it makes him look good in the franchise that, we knew he was coming.
Meanwhile, I wouldn't have been in the game if there wasn't an injury.
Of course. Would have been in the game.
Don't give me that. Gushing about Landry, making him look good, just makes them look bad. They went out and got Michael Vick.
Right.
You know, in my opinion, embarrassed themselves by putting Michael Vick on their roster, and the whole time Landry Jones has been better.
Now it's next man up, and, you know, standard is the standard. We're back to all that again, and they're kind of right about it.
Well, you know who did that yesterday to piss me off was was Vince Williams.
Oh, Vince Williams?
You see the tweet that he put out there? Now y'all are Landry fans, and you're all killing them during the preseason. Hashtag wishy-washy.
Yeah. He told me there was some drama about the defense going on in the preseason. He was giving me a little attitude about that.
Yeah, there's a lot of how do you like me now going on with him.
There was some of that.
I distinctly remember the tweet that Vince Williams sent out a couple weeks ago when they signed Michael Vick saying that, I don't know why we signed this bum. Landry's better. Do you remember that tweet?
No.
Of course you don't, because it didn't happen.
Yeah.
What a jag-off. I mean, like, come on. You're telling us we're wishy-washy? Where were you?
Right.
Where were you during the preseason, say, back off Landry, this guy's a really good quarterback? Or where were you when Michael Vick was signed saying, I don't know why we got Michael Vick, Landry's better. Don't tell me I'm wishy-washy.
Well, Mike Mitchell yesterday said this defense gets no respect, so we just have to go out and take it. Were you there for that?
No, I wasn't. Who said that?
Mike Mitchell.
Mitchell said that. Hey, if they're going to play that card, they've got a right to now. They're playing well. Like I say, I think they are legit.
And they didn't get any respect at the beginning. I don't think it wasn't any getting respect. Everybody knew there were question marks. You lose a Hall of Fame coordinator. A bunch of guys retire. You got a lot of young guys that haven't played before. You end up with some new guys. It's totally fair to question what you were going to expect from that group.
Like, I thought James Harrison was perfect yesterday. We'll play him later. But he said, we're just playing better. You know, we've been together a year. We guys are learning the defense. It's not like he's saying you guys didn't give us a chance. And you don't why you
how
have
many
to take
alms
the,
did he have in there? Alm.
He had some alms, but like, why do you got to take the red ass approach and rip your fans in the media and get your backup? You were terrible.
How about
legitimately
if everybody kissed your ass and thought you're going to be great, and then you go out and lose 3 games, and we walk in and say, "Oh yeah, you guys thought you were great. You suck now."
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Respect and taking respect from Mike Mitchell, that rings a little hollow to me, because Mike Mitchell wasn't here for literally decades where people just fawned over the defense, whether it deserved it or not. Mike Mitchell wasn't here for a number of games where the quarterback would be blamed on a day where he would throw four touchdowns and one interception, regardless of who that quarterback was. Maddox, Cordell, Ben Roethlisberger,
Bradshaw.
Bradshaw, and people would be upset at the quarterback as opposed to the defense that allowed the other team to score 33 points. You know, he wasn't here for all that. He was just here for 1 year. But there's a long history in Pittsburgh of the fan base giving too much respect to its own defense because of past history and not realizing that it was crumbling, as it was for about 4 years before it hit rock bottom last year.
I do feel a little bad for the Mitchell criticism last year. If he was injured and played through it and didn't say a word about it, I have some sympathy for what he dealt with last year.
Yeah, and
personally,
it'd be very easy to come out and say I'm hurt or you know, but just to keep your mouth shut, and
because he got crushed last year,
he did,
and maybe it wasn't justified, but
yeah, well, he's a jerk. I mean, he really is a loudmouth, trash talking.
You think that
prickly
about Mitchell?
You don't think he's a loudmouth trash talker?
I've always found him to be fine, like respectable, when we talk to him. Like, not on the field, you mean, or in the room?
On the field.
On the field, yeah. He
jumped in the middle of my. I was doing an interview in San Diego. I got Le'Veon Bell with a 1-on-1 talking about the winning touchdown and everything, which was a nice get. Right in the middle of it, he has to come over and stick his face in front of the camera. The best running back in it, which in the NFL
now. You probably used that cut.
I did use it. I mean, you know, but still, butt out. I'm not talking to you.
I don't like Mike Mitchell. I don't like his attitude. I don't like it the way he carries himself. So I don't feel bad that he got criticized last year.
Okay. Mike asks emails. Can you guys clarify the call with Boykin recovering the punt? They made it seem like on TV as soon as the Steelers touched the ball, Arizona can do whatever they want with it, even if they fumbled it and it was still Arizona's
Hockley
ball.
Hockley said that by rule the receiving team has the option on that play of taking the ball where it was down no matter what. So they could have picked it up and ran with it.
Yes.
But they have the option of taking it there. So it's really a risk. What's that play about the drop kick near the end of the half or whatever? I remember the Steelers and Dolphins.
Drop kicks.
There's some weird thing about
the rule book.
The drop kick, I thought, got taken out of the rule book this year, right?
It maybe did.
But in exchange for the 2-point conversion.
And I can't even remember the particulars. I can't remember if Noll caught Shula with his pants down or the other way around with the rule, and it was a rule that I had never heard of, but that was one of those things. That's how it was explained.
Yes,
so apparently if you do what Boykin did there.
When you touch it, it's called first touching.
Yeah.
That gives the return team carte blanche. It's almost a free play.
You pick it up and run with it, it's fine, and if you decide you want to take it where it was down, you can go back and
everything
do that.
I saw from on Twitter, Pro Football Talk, Pereira, everybody said that Hockley and the crew got that right, that it's a quirk in the rule book. It doesn't make much sense. I don't know why it's on there like that. But, yes, that's what you can do.
It's amazing. I tweeted out the rule from the rule book. And so if he returned it, like, say, to midfield, fumbled it, the Steelers picked it up and returned
they
it for a touchdown.
They could have went back and took it at the 2.
They could have went back and took it back at the
Apparently.
2. Apparently. Unless there was a penalty on the return team during their return before the Steelers would have gotten it, then it's all null and void and the Steelers would have gotten the ball.
How long do you think
that's
it would take?
This rule is.
How long would that discussion have taken?
Oh, my God.
Oh, so wait a minute. So if John Brown or whoever it was had picked up the ball and started running and a Cardinal guy blocked
DeMarco
Thomas in the back.
Yes.
And then Brown fumbles it away to the Steelers at midfield. The
Steelers
get the
get
ball.
It at midfield because the penalty
nullifies the
penalty
option to go back.
The penalty nullifies the first touching rule. It's so dumb. It's like the most bizarre rule in the rule book.
How does a penalty nullify something that isn't a penalty?
I don't know. But it's here. It's what it says.
That's stupid.
If the receiving team gains possession, subsequently loses possession, and fouls after the kicking team gains possession, the spot of first touching is disregarded and the kicking team gains possession.
So you want to be a referee.
Oh, so they have to foul after the fumble.
After the fumble.
Okay. All right. So my analogy is wrong.
Okay.
All right.
You have to penalize on defense. You have to be the defensive team at that point for it to not count. You said
I see. Okay. So that's true. So the Steelers would have had to recover and then a penalty on the Steelers' return of the fumble.
Right.
Oh, that's bizarre. Anyway, yeah, that's a confusing one. Looked like the Steelers deserved to have a touchdown on that.
Yeah, it did.
Well, you saw immediately on the Cardinal bench, everybody came up and patted the guy on the head. And,
like, good job.
You know, smart play.
So they almost know that. I didn't know that rule. SportsTalkAtTribWeb.com, Duffy's Beer Morning Show, Laird, Junker, Benz. Tim's emails, not Tim Benz, another Tim. I'll have to say the game Sunday was relatively free of Steelers coaching errors, guys, except for Tomlin's decision to go for two. after Bryant's first touchdown. At that point, it's apparent the game will be low scoring, so a field goal lead is preferred and not attempt for a four-point margin.
The going for two was a coaching error, in my opinion. Another blatant coaching error was what they did at the end of the second quarter, what they did right before halftime. What the hell was that? 43 seconds left, you get the ball. What did they manage to run off? Like 16 seconds? If Jordan Berry doesn't bail them out with that 79-yard punt, who knows? Arizona might have had a chance for another field goal.
That's true, yeah. The Steelers got it with 37
seconds.
No.
40, I thought it was 43 seconds or 48 seconds or something like that. And they ran three plays and didn't run any time off the clock. They punted it back with like half a minute still to go.
He uncorks a 79-yard punt.
The Odom one at that point. He hand delivered their first touchdown.
You know, the potential existed for something like Michigan State, where something crazy could have happened at the end of the half with the punt. There could have been a return, or, you know, maybe Carson Palmer hits him on a bomb, or one long play and a field goal. I mean, you gave them the ball back with the opportunity to score. Either you kneel it out there, run it out, or, just, you know, Michael Vick trying to run a 2-minute offense.
Well, he was good at it the last time we saw
it. He was good at it in San Diego, but did you feel like that was going to go anywhere?
No, I like you, I thought this could come back to bite him, and they could be down 13-3 at the half.
Take the knee, you get the ball in the second half, and try to make something of it.
Bart, normally from Baltimore, says, I was up at the game yesterday, guys. A couple things. Hardly saw any Arizona fans. Saw Patrick Peterson frustrating Antonio Brown all day. And then did you guys notice Peterson pulled up and stopped running after Martavis Bryant on the final touchdown that he had?
Yeah, I think what was interesting to watch was he busted it up the sideline to try to catch Bryant. Peterson's a fast player.
Bryant pulled away.
Think he just lost the gas. I mean, he emptied the tank. And he slowed up because he didn't have anything left. I mean, he tried to run a 100-meter sprint there to try to catch him.
What impressed me about the run was it wasn't just straight out. He had a weave some, too. I mean, it's like running away from an alligator. I mean, you know, if it just all out straight speed and you outrun the other guy, that's one thing. But he had to run through some stuff to...
He is a force. I mean, Martavis Bryant could be one of the best receivers in the league here pretty soon, right? I mean,
again, I had a moment yesterday watching that play where I thought to myself, man, this would have been nice against Baltimore, huh?
Yeah. Right? Instead of Darius Hayward Bay, I mean, who wasn't bad when his fill-in time, but I mean, now that you had this guy back, between he and Brown and Bell.
But going back to the thing about him covering AB.
Yeah,
there were times AB was open and he didn't throw him the ball too, because of what he said earlier in the week. They had a camera on him, so that's not completely true that he was frustrated all day by this guy.
Do we know if Brown was barking at Landry Jones or was it the officials or both?
Was the ball on his feet?
Yeah, the ball at his feet.
That was right at Landry.
It was directed.
No doubt no that question. Was at Landry.
Because Rossi said somebody told him in the press box. Well, Rossi on an 11, or somebody told him he was yelling at the refs. I don't know where Rossi got that. We'll ask him. At 11, but
probably from the complete transcript of the Antonio Brown.
Did you watch him on the sideline when he kept pointing at his feet when he was walking up and down the bench talking to other players?
Oh, he was like mocking the throw and how bad it was.
Well, he was like he's pointing down at his feet, and then he like did one of these where he held his arms behind.
You know, the next
his
time he drops a touchdown pass right in his gut from Michael Vick, Michael Vick should be pointing at him and yelling at him in front of everybody.
He showed him up just like he showed up Michael Vick verbally.
Mike Vick.
Michael. I'm going to do my Cassius Clay thing here. You know, this is him trying to do an image rehab, honest to God, thinking like new name, new man thing. Mike, Michael, whatever.
I would say Mike because Antonio called him Mike Vick every time.
Mike Vick, right, yeah. But, you know, he showed him up verbally during the week, and this time I think he showed up Landry Jones in front of 60,000 people.
Chaz emails. Perhaps all that was necessary was to let Landry Jones play in a, capital letters now, real game.
Let Landry be Landry.
Landry was Landry. Well, we got some of that, too. Villanueva, who I talked to, who's the new left tackle of the Steelers.
Yeah, we haven't even mentioned that, and that's now you're looking...
That's big.
You're going to get Ben back, but now you've lost two-fifths of your offensive line that you thought was going to be such a strength at the beginning of the year. That comes the same week that you find out Pouncey's out for the rest of the year. That's not good.
And left tackle suddenly becomes more important again now because you got a right-handed quarterback in there again. Because Gilbert, who I thought of the offensive linemen, has been maybe their best the last 2 weeks when he's needed to be, with Vic being the lefty quarterback. I thought Gilbert's been pretty good.
Yeah.
Beecham was struggling yesterday before he went out. Beecham has not been as good this year as he was last year.
I felt so bad for him. He was in tears coming out. He had the big brace on. He was in crutches. He was hugging guys and just couldn't contain his emotions in the locker room yesterday. But it's a contract year for him. I mean, he gambled on himself to be healthy, have a great year, and I don't know. He probably would come back from this fine, right? I mean, who knows? But he's out for the year, and that's obviously tough for him. But anyway, talking to Villanueva, he said, we weren't good enough for Landry in the preseason. He wasn't getting protection. You can't judge him off that. Like this email of Chaz says, he didn't play in a real game. It was preseason. Do you buy that at all, that maybe he does need to have first-teamers around him? If he does get protection, he can be a good quarterback?
Beecham's agent calling saying his knee will be fine.
Well, I think the one thing is, without a doubt, regardless of who was playing and what kind of protection he got, the amount of reps that Landry Jones got this preseason is paying dividends now.
It has to have helped some.
Yeah. He played a ton.
I guess his arm is good. I mean, Oklahoma, he was always a dink and dunker, but he made that throw to Bryant over the middle, over the top of the linebacker. That's a pretty big-time throw, right? He's got arm strength, it seems like. Accuracy is
the lack of protection
erratic.
That he didn't have, okay, that Villanueva is talking about, had nothing to do with the two-point play interception. Had nothing to do with the ball in the feet of Antonio Brown. Had nothing to do with the near pick that should have been intercepted.
The one behind Brown.
Yeah. Okay, so like all those errors that Landry made, those are still signs that you're dealing with a third-string quarterback.
Yep. But yeah, he also
I think
made
you
throws
hit it on the head by, I think it was you, Tim, or maybe Ken, I can't remember now, that given a week, if they know he's playing and he starts a game, you don't expect to see a repeat of what you saw. Maybe you will. Maybe he's been around almost 3 years now. He was a hell of a college quarterback. He gets it. He's comfortable with the offense. Maybe he could be their number two guy now. But I think a big part of it is mixing the knuckleball in there yesterday.
I like that. Adam in Baltimore. Can I get an early jag off of the week vote from Mike Tomlin, guys? Not for the dumb two-point conversion attempt, but for the inevitable nonsense explanation in tomorrow's press conference. You know, the one where he tells us it was a good idea and he'd do it again. That probably is coming. And Tim will ask him about it.
The other one I wanted to ask him about, the third and one where Landry came in for Vic after Vic got...
dirt in his eye.
Dirt in his eye.
Oh, my God. Was that embarrassing?
Oh, God. Instead of saying going through the concussion protocol.
The whole planet saw him get kneed in the head, and the Steelers decide to come out with he got dirt in his eye.
Yeah, the dirt in his eye came from the player's knee that was on his
helmet. Hockley made him leave the game, right?
Right.
I mean, it wasn't, yeah.
He's having a concussion evaluation.
Yeah.
And it turns into
dirt in his eye.
Dirt in his eye. He probably had both because his face mask was ground into the Heinz Field turf. That's why he got dirt in his eye. So I think he might have had a mild concussion as well. But maybe he just got his bell rung and he showed no signs, whatever. So anyway, Landry comes in, right, on a third down. We were told by this coaching staff all after the San Diego game that the Wildcat was a great option because it got the ball right into Le'Veon's hand. He can make his own reads quickly. There's no issue with the exchange. He could just get up, pick his hole, and get a yard. He just needed a yard against San Diego, right? Just needed a yard in this situation. Why not go to the Wildcat there? Where was it? Where was the Wildcat the
once,
whole game
wow.
with the third-string quarterback in there?
Landry's too good. You don't want to take him off the field.
Specifically that third and one, I thought they're definitely going Wildcat here. They didn't even think about it. They didn't even talk about it.
Which third and one?
I'm talking about the one after Michael Vick had to come out of the game.
The one play that Jones came in
for.
Because remember, Jones came in
and they punted.
Yes. They handed it to him, right? They handed it to him, but then he got blown up.
Mm-hmm.
Then they punted and Vick came back in the next series, and that's when he hurt his hamstring.
Right. Sheets Dave emails from Altoona. Where in the world did that come from? And wow, does Jones look like a good backup? And sadly, Vic looks like he is done. Could this be the end for Vic?
Yep. I'm really broken up about it.
I know you are. That said, if he's done, they got to find another quarterback this week.
Yes.
Or, you know, Tyler Murphy, whoever, you know, bring him off the
practice squad.
There's just on the squad?
Yeah, there's some issues here with what they're going to do on the roster because you probably have to replace an offensive lineman. We'll have to replace an offensive lineman.
Well, what about Mike Adams? What's his deal?
Oh, God, I forgot about him.
He's still in the franchise somewhere. He's like, I think he's available still. Could that be an addition?
How many games in are we now? Because he was on PUP, right? Was he on PUP?
Yeah, I think he's still on the PUP list. I think he's ready to come off it pretty soon.
Wait,
Eight games? Or
I thought it was six.
Maybe it is six, and they've already played that.
I'll have to check with Kabali on that ruling. But I think he's now your backup tackle, so that's not too bad. I mean, if he's your backup, at least you've seen him before.
Yeah. Well, whatever the case is, they need to get another offensive lineman for depth. But where I was going with the thought was, quarterback-wise, when Mike Tomlin said in his press conference after the game yesterday, we have options. No, you just got confusion is what you have. I wouldn't look at this as options. My guess right now is you start Landry Jones against Kansas City. What you do backup-wise, that's where the only option that comes in is, how injured is Michael Vick, and do you want to cut him, put him on IR? What do you do? If this is got a little tweak back there, or if this is a legitimate hamstring pull that's going to keep him out for a week or two, if he's beyond 2 weeks, Ken, do you keep him, or you just
it's
put him
sixth.
On IR?
I got the rule here, Tim.
Six, all right.
A player on the pup list can be removed and added to the roster at any point during training camp or the preseason when a player is medically cleared to participate. If that player is still on pup when the regular season begins, he's not eligible to return until after 6 weeks. After that 6 weeks, they have a 3-week window to decide whether to add him, put him on IR, or release him.
So he's in the window right now.
Yeah,
he's
in that
right?
window.
All right. But you know what I'm saying with Vic,
he had back surgery, right? So that's who knows what Adams is going to be like coming off back surgery.
Right.
But yeah, back to your quarterback dilemma.
What do you do with Vic?
It's a medical question. You know, if he's good in 2 weeks, you're saying, I think you keep him.
I don't want to go into the game with Roethlisberger dressed unless he's starting.
I agree.
Tyler Murphy, then.
You put Ben on the bench in uniform, and you're suggesting that he's not really good enough to play. Invariably, he will have to play.
Yeah, probably.
And he'll have to play against Tom Bolley and Justin Houston, who
just run Wildcat. You run your Wildcat the whole game.
But just go on with one quarterback?
Just have Le'Veon run from quarterback. And Antonio Brown throws it when you need it.
Even if you put Ben in, don't let him touch the ball.
Yeah, just put him as a decoy. Run that Chuck Pagano play.
You know that the offense changes less dramatically when Landry Jones is in there. They ran what looked like a hell of a lot more of their offense
right.
once
mm-hmm.
Landry Jones got in.
Yeah.
So for the sake of argument, let's say they get through the Kansas City game. Let's say they win it with Landry, whether he's good, bad, indifferent, whatever. Now Ben is ready to come back the next week. So my thinking then would be you put Landry in as your backup quarterback because there's more consistency there with the offense. Do you need Mike Vick on the team then as your third QB with a bad hamstring when the best thing he does still more than anything else is run?
Yeah, it's a good point about the running with the hamstring issue. A good question.
I think you have to wait and see if bad the hamstring is.
Yeah, you have to see if the hamstring
is. Those things
issue.
Can be 10 days. It could be 10 months.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't with him running. Obviously, you see now the explanation why you didn't want him running because he's going to set himself up to get hurt. But when he ran the ball, he still looked like the old Mike Vick, didn't he?
He did. I mean, maybe you could tell him not to head-first dive anymore. That's where he's getting in trouble, right? I mean, why does he feel the need to dive forward all the time?
Oh, you're talking about with the concussion?
Just do the hook slides.
You mean the dirt in his eye?
Dirt in the eye.
But he did go forward. It wasn't so much his fault because he kind of got shoved by the defensive back and he took that one extra false step. Did you notice that? That's where the hamstring pull came in.
Oh, no, I didn't know where
he got pushed along the sidelines as he was going out of bounds. It was 50-50 if it was going to be a late flag, but he hadn't quite gone out yet. So I think the ref gave the D-back the benefit of the doubt. I don't remember who it was, but whoever it was shoved him. As he was shoving him, he kind of took an extra step, and there's no ground there because he got shoved. And I think he kicked his leg back, expecting the force of the ground to push off of, and there's no ground. And that's when he got up and started limping on the hammy.
Hmm. Troy emails, Landry Jones stinks, but at least he throws the ball downfield a little and seems to know the offense. Vic is flat terrible. He had one good quarter and nine completely shitty ones. Thanks, Troy.
Tell us how you really feel.
Tomlin can't play Vic. He doesn't have any good options, but Landry is better than Vic.
One thing
it's
with
probably
Vic
accurate.
That is very, very evident is, I don't know if this was always the case going back to his days in Atlanta when he was a pro bowler, or if this just came over time playing with lesser teammates around him. Boy, does he have no confidence to throw the ball unless he knows that wide receiver is wide open. He never throws the ball
threads the needle
before the receiver has made his break. And I think that's part of the reason why you see him so oftentimes under pressure on these deep balls. You know, I've been with a lot of people complaining about the fact that even though he's got a good arm, they don't let him throw deep very much.
Mm-hmm.
boy, I mean, the back-to-back sequence where he got sacked twice by Za'Darius Williams from Baltimore. Smith. Then there was a similar sequence against San Diego. Remember, he got sacked back-to-back times trying to go deep? It happened again yesterday.
Yeah.
In the shadow of the goal line.
It was almost a safety.
There's almost a safety, and then he gets sacked again on the next play or barely escaped a sack on the next play. This happened three games in a row now where they try back-to-back deep balls on consecutive plays.
He got bailed
plays.
Out by roughing the passer.
That's what it was. Yes, it was. The defensive back, and what a shit call that was. Talk about bad calls. He's 5'10". How are you supposed to avoid the helmet-to-helmet if you're 6'1"?
They did get lucky in the first half on several significant calls.
Well, I think the big story is they've won two games in a row that really they probably didn't have any business winning, and they're in the thick of things, and if they can get healthy here, might be able to have a nice run here at the end of the year. I don't think we saw the coming out party for Landry Jones yesterday. He did a great job. Now maybe he can be your backup. Maybe you can justify the draft pick they took on him. Moving forward, maybe next year he's number two behind Ben. But that's it. The fact that you got two wins now with him hurt, you probably consider yourself lucky, and moving forward, you just have to figure out. I give them credit for holding it together with baling wire and bubble gum right now, which they did in the first half yesterday with no offense and a fairly porous defense. And in San Diego, the defense played well in the first half. That's why they held it in when they're off. But that's two games in a row. Their offense didn't exist in the first half.
They were fired up. I stood in the tunnel and watched them all come in. I mean, I haven't seen them that emotional.
They were fired up in San Diego, too. They were loud, yes.
Yeah.
And San Diego was
They got
ticked.
Belief. Yeah. Jeff in Illinois going Ghostbusters on us.
How about San Diego? I mean, they get right down inside the 10 yesterday
against
the Packers. That's two games in a row. They got to be talking to themselves.
He threw how many times did Carson Palmer throw? Sorry, Phillip Rivers? Like,
set a record, hey?
Like 60-something?
He set their team passing record, too, for yardage, I think.
Empty. Empty Phil Rivers stats yet again.
Like Josh McCown?
Yes. Jeff says, the dead are rising from the grave, human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria, and Landry Jones is going 8-for-10 for 168 yards.
Dogs
and
Vic living together.
The world is ending, guys. That's my only analysis from yesterday's game.
McCown was 20 of 39 for 213, so he didn't have as big of a
How many yards did Rivers pass for, Tim?
I'm looking. I'm trying to find that box score. Oh, here it is. Rivers ended up going 43 of 65 for 503.
503.
He's got himself in fantasy.
Wow.
Keenan Allen, I remember, at halftime, I was saying this to Charlie on the postgame show, and I was looking at the box, I had to double check. It was like 11 for 124 at the half for Keenan Allen.
Rivers and Allen Rivers plays FanDuel, and Allen plays DraftKings.
Yeah. Rivers is 503 yards passing. Vic had six at halftime.
Allen wound up 14 for 157.
But Vic's team won, and Rivers' team's lost.
They're as different as Tim Benz and Nikki Benz. It's the Duffy's Beer morning show here on Trib Live Radio.
We've had our complete hour. Can I go get my coffee now, please, sir?
Get a sip of coffee. That's a commercial-free hour, guy.
That's what I mean.
You can't find that on terrestrial radio. Brand X, Y, or Z.
What's it like interviewing my long-lost sister?
Was very awkward that she brought your name up.
Did she bring it up during the interview or afterwards?
Afterwards, which was better, I guess.
Wait a minute, why were you interviewing her?
Well, Taylor's out of town for the weekend. He went to Carolina. Where'd he go?
He went to a wedding.
Went to a wedding.
South Carolina.
So I had to interview the blush feature of the week, which is Tim's long-lost cousin, Nikki Benz.
Oh, wait a minute. You do have a cousin that's an actress. That's who I
that's
thought we
the
were
thing.
Talking about.
Yeah, Nikki Benz is a porn star.
Yeah. Oh, so I'm thinking this is the actress.
Well, that happens
What's
quite
her name?
A bit on Twitter. My cousin? Julie.
Julie Benz, that's right, yeah.
So oftentimes Julie is mistaken for Nikki, Nikki is mistaken for Julie, and I saw Nikki at iHeart because I went over to Steeler Nation Radio.
Yes.
She was concluding Madden's interview and came out and said, well, I've got it. We've passed in the hallway like three or four times after Madden's show, and I've never actually met her. So I figured I should meet my long-lost cousin / sis. Twitter thinks that we are somehow related because obviously the porn star is going to use her real name, right?
Yeah. I'm a big fan of your grandfather, Mercedes.
You don't have any, though.
But a boom.
I see you're driving
a
non-Mercedes. We're brought to you on Trib Live Radio by Relax the Back.